Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to episode 19 of the Believe Knicks podcast. Anthony Miranda, as always, joined by Stacey Pat. Stacey, it's a potentially interesting time in the Knicks season if you are of a certain mentality. So the Knicks have a stretch of fairly winnable games coming up at home. They have two games left against Washington, who is 11th right ahead of them. They have two games left with Charlotte, who's 10th. They have a game left with Atlanta, who is 9th. Do you believe, Stacey Patton, that these Knicks can finish as strong as last year's team did and make a run, whether you want it or not, to the play-in tournament?
Do I think the Knicks team is as strong as last year's? No, I think it's actually a better team than last year's.
Do you?
Yeah. I think we have this. You can argue, like, the biggest difference between this year and last year is that Julius Randle isn't shooting 41% from three. That's what's funny, because I've criticized Tibbs a lot. But there is no overcoming that. A guy who became a middle class LeBron, he became that for a year, and then he went to not that, right? But I think the talent otherwise, I think that as much as I've criticized Alec Burks at point guard, I think he's a better point guard than Alfred. I think he's been better at that spot than Alfred Payton. I think Deuce McBride is on the roster and would be better than Alfred Payton, especially since Alfred Payton's main contribution was defense. I think Deuce is a much better defender than Alfred already. I think RJ has gotten a lot better than last year. I think Mitch right now is at least as good as he was last year. I think the roster has improved. And a lot of people were saying that, you know, even if the roster improves because the East is so good, the Knicks might not be as good. Mm-hmm. And COVID played a part in that. Like, Boston was healthy, probably a better team than us last year, right? But they were very rarely healthy all year last year, both due to COVID and injuries. So, like, that's just one team, but that's disregarding the fact that Chicago improved, Cleveland improved, you know. Mm-hmm. But the question of, do I think they can make a run last year? Here's the thing, and Matt, we've talked about this on the Pod Strickland podcast. I think with Tibbs, there's been a lot of questions, right? The stereotype might be he's this old school, uncreative coach. You know, I think that a lot of the people who support him are like, well, if we had a real point guard, and oftentimes when they say like a real point guard, a full-blown full floor general, I'm like, well, there aren't that many floor generals around, right? If you're talking about a guy who can score at three levels, distribute and see every pass, and defend, there is one player named with that, right? His name is Chris Paul, and he plays for the Phoenix Suns, and he's 37 years old, right? Everyone else has some weakness in those. Like, that doesn't really exist the same way it used to. There's no Andre Millers anymore. And I'm not sure an Andre Miller would be great if we are trying to get RJ and Randle so many reps in this game. But with Tibbs, like, I think that when we've really been low on, like, with 7 or 8 bodies that can play, mm-hmm. I've seen him be creative. I've seen him run creative offensive sets. I've seen him go small with RJ at the 4. I've seen him go small with RJ and Cam at the 4. And then Randle the 5, right? Yeah. I've seen him do things that you're like, he would never do that. Mm-hmm. And he will be creative and he'll make it work. And that's what's really frustrating about him. He's like, it's not that he can't do that. It's just he's so stubborn about it. So if there was a path to the Knicks going to the playoffs, I think it would be him leaning into that more. But you've seen that once he gets people back, he'll play Taj at the four. He'll reduce Deuce's minutes. He refuses to stop playing Alec Burks at point guard, which I think is, of all the people that are hurt by Alec Burks playing at point guard, Alec Burks is probably number one because he's great off ball. He's a great shooter. When he can attack from the wings and get to the foul line, he's really good at that. Or we can run a pick and roll where there's another guard on the floor. He's good at getting to the line. But when he is the guy, that's just not his game, you know, and it's even exacerbated when they pressure the ball full court and it takes him 10 seconds to get the ball up court. And like all of these things are not meant to be a criticism of Alec Burks as a basketball player, but Alec Burks is a point guard. And I don't think Tibbs will move off of that, but I think that those are the things that, because I do think they're playing better of late. Even in the Nets game, they played well. I do question Tibbs' defensive strategy because on the one hand, Kevin Durant is, I just said this in a text earlier today, but I think in terms of pure scoring ability, and maybe I'll get some heat for this, there are two other people I would put with Kevin Durant in the history of everyone I've seen. And that's Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin Durant is one of the three best scorers I've ever seen play the game. And he's 7 foot to boot. So, but on the other hand, they didn't have a good strategy against them. And I think he, like, it's one thing to say he's a great scorer. It's another thing to say he scored 53 and they didn't really have anyone else that could beat you. And you're supposed to be a defensive coach. So, but they are playing better. I think I would have more confidence in them being able to, like, yeah, like, let move Burks off ball, let Quickly and Deuce take all the point guard reps, mix and match more Fournier with stronger defenders at the one. And that would happen, by the way, if you played him with Quick, because Quickly is a better defender at the one than Burks. I think Burks is better on bigger defenders, but Quickly is better at point of attack. Deuce is better at basically everything on defense. Mm-hmm. And like, let that, if I knew he was, and that's without even talking about the bigs, right? Like, even Obi had 8 points in 8 minutes and he played 8 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, those are the things where I'm like, I just don't know if this team can get back there. And that does bother me. It's like, you can say, well, if Tibbs had real players, would he be better? But once we get those guys, is he going to be creative with them? Maybe he'll be even less creative, right? Because he only ever shows that when we're down to the last man. So anyway, I just talked a lot, but those are kind of my thoughts on that.
Well, I'm going to hit you with another question then. More of what do you think of this idea? Nobody knew what Randall would be this year. I was hoping... I feel like Randall has fallen multiple levels. Like you said, he went from, you know, poor man's LeBron to like a poor man's Sabonis. And that's a big drop. Like, it's still a nice player, but that's an enormous drop in terms of performance. I feel like not only did the Knicks season basically end when they lost Rose, in retrospect, I didn't know at the time that it would turn out this way, but looking back, I feel like they just couldn't overcome all of that kind of mucked up in their roster and rotations. Do you think that I think the Knicks would have had an easier time dealing with Randall being out than Rose.
Hmm.
Because I think that, I mean,
is that a vote?
What's that?
Is that a vote of confidence for Obi, or?
It's a vote of confidence to how I think Obi could have looked playing alongside Barrett and playing alongside more a center who can like protect the rim with him out there. And I think it speaks to, I think Obi would have been the biggest beneficiary, and I think that would have benefited the Knicks. And I think because of Rose's I think a lot of times this is overblown, but I really think as far as a leader of men on the floor, Rose is someone I'd rather have out there than Randall, just because Rose to me seems so calm and Randall does not. That I hadn't really thought of it until now, but and that makes me wonder, like, for the future, you know, is that a sign that, man, they better be really careful with Rose? And or is it a sign that, like, I keep coming back to feeling that, like, RJ should replace Randall, not positionally, but in terms of the offensive role that Randall plays.
I think there's an argument for positionally too, by the way.
Yeah, because RJ's so strong.
RJ's good at the four. Like, he has been. And, like, part of it is also, it's not just him playing the four, but when he played with Cam is a terrible rebounder for his size. Like, Cam should be able to play the four, but that's the big drawback. But when he plays with RJ, it matters less, right? Because RJ is a really good rebounder.
Yeah.
When they both play with Quickly, Quickly is weirdly a really good rebounder for being a skinny 6'3" guy. He has long arms, but he's also just a smart player. Mm-hmm. So that that allows you, and then Reddish can give you the other stuff they don't give you, which is weak side rim protection. He's a long, solid athlete. When he's locked in, he has good, well, it's not even about locked in, it's just like, but the things he notices when he sees what's happening, because I like when you say he's not locked in, you that's implicitly a criticism on his effort. Right. But I think Reddish has been locked in on the Knicks. He just misses stuff. You know, he doesn't see things. You'll see lots of times where he's trying to help and his guy will just slide over to the corner and he doesn't see it. I don't think that's a lack of focus. Sometimes you miss things. He just happens to miss them, you know, more than someone like Miles or Michael Bridges, right? He's not that.
There's a similarity. Sorry, he reminds me on that level when Latrell Sprewell came to the Knicks, he was very hyped as a great individual defender, and he was. But he struggled for a while, and he was a guy who played, you know, significant minutes and played consistently, just to find his fit in a new context of a team defense. And I feel like Reddish coming over into a different kind of defense and never really having any consistent time in it, I don't know how much you could even expect to see of him in terms of as a team defender.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't great at that in Atlanta either. He wasn't great at that next to RJ Barrett in college. They were really bailed out a lot by the fact that Zion could just eat up any attempt within 15 feet of the basket because of Zion versus college players.
Yeah.
But that's a fair point, right? How much of that is just, and you never, you know, you never want to criticize a player's knowledge. I think Cam has shown a great deal of feel on the offensive end. He's good at relocating. He wasn't getting the ball much when he started, and he started two more before he got hurt. And I think he was very good at moving without the ball. And he started to develop that chemistry quickly. Quickly, I mentioned in particular, because he played most of his minutes with them. But and that's also been a talking point for Knicks Twitter, that Quickly just hates Cam or something. Right? I think part of that was just them developing together. And it's a credit to Cam Reddish that he found ways to get the ball or to make himself open for Quickly, you know, whatever Quickly's limitations may be or whatever Quickly's tendencies may be. But the point I'm making about RJ is that, like, you can play him at the four with a various, and like they've played him at the four with Randall. And I think, yeah. I think it's telling that I think Tibbs has been more willing to go to that. Like Tibbs, it seems like has been more willing to go with Randall at the four next to, or sorry, Randall at the five next to RJ than Randall at the five next to Obi. Yeah. I think that's interesting to me. And it kind of makes sense, at least on defense and offense, because RJ is a better shooter than Obi. Like, Obi is just, if Obi could shoot, all of this would, so there are so many problems would be solved. And I think he has a nice form, but you know, just shots have, he went 2-for-3 from three against Brooklyn. I think he will shoot at some point in his NBA career at a high level or at a good level. It just isn't happening right now. But I mean, it's really that lack of creativity that's Yeah, and I mean, if you look at 538, you know, that's without considering the fact that they are, you know, one of the, they're projected to not make the playoffs. Right now, according to 538, and you know, you can add in standard analytics or bullshit caveat, but they're at 0.8%, which is partly, this is the first time I've seen this in a while, but they're at 0.8% projected to finish 36 and 46. The Pelicans are projected to finish 35 and 47. This is playoffs, and I think it's not only play-in, it's like actually making the playoffs. So take that. But it's 0.8% to actually make the playoffs, but the Pelicans are projected to finish a game behind the Knicks, but have a 25% chance at the playoffs, right? Wow. So it shows that the East really is that much better right now.
Yeah.
But even the Lakers are projected to finish with a worse record than us. yeah, so it's a tough season. Like, on one hand, I really am frustrated with Tibbs not giving minutes to Deuce and other guys. And Sims, like, it's not so much that I think Sims is some world beater, but he's clearly better. I'm not saying he's even better than Nerlens Noel, but he's better than the version of Nerlens Noel we saw this year, who was clearly hurt.
Certainly.
And that didn't help anyone, least of all Nerlens Noel. So, you know, and Sims is, it's not like I've compared to Grimes, where I've said this a lot, like Grimes was strictly out of the rotation. Then we had seven guys available and he got to play and he scored 28 points. Right. And I'm like, at that point, I'm like, oh, are they really? And then I'm like, you know, was he really not ready? A, but also B, if you look at the way Grimes and McBride and Sims play, and you're talking about earning it in practice, like, look at the way those guys, do you really think Grimes is taking plays off in practice?
Right?
Do you think that he's not, like, he's locking up high-level NBA players? Do you really think he's struggling to guard Kemba Walker in practice? I don't. But Sims, I can at least understand a little bit, because early in the season, Sims looked lost on defense. And that's a credit to, you know, to Tibbs, of course, and to Kenny Payne and the staff for developing him. So that might be a mitigating factor, but it does feel like, you know, Tibbs could have played these guys more. It doesn't have to be a binary thing, but at times when the vets might have been struggling, where they needed energy, where maybe they were playing too many minutes, like Alec Burks playing 36 minutes because he also has to play point guard, maybe that could have been mitigated with Deuce. You know, it's those kinds of things that, and if Tibbs is still unwilling to do that, if Deuce is still just a, you know, manage the load for 12 minutes kind of guy, I that would be the only, like, real, you know, concavity that would make me believe we can make the plan.
Yeah, you talked about the East being better. Until the Melo Ball got hurt last year, Charlotte was ahead of the Knicks much of the season also. There's so many teams in the East that are better or more legitimate than they've been in a while. It's really tough. It's weird to have a season where the Lakers are collapsing this spectacularly, and I can only take like a little bit of joy in it because they actually still do have a better record than the Knicks somehow. It kills
me. Do you ever feel like the Lakers are kind of like the Knicks?
That is the most bizarre sounding question I think I have ever heard said out loud.
Because it's certainly not on a franchise level.
Yeah, right? It seems immediately like no, but certainly there's similarities. In what sense do you mean?
Well, so I will preface this by saying my best friend is a huge Lakers fan. and we've watched a lot of, like, oh, he has league pass and I don't. So we'll watch a lot of basketball together.
Yeah.
And we've watched, but it's a team that lacks a true point guard, right? So their true point guard is Russell Westbrook, who has been, if you don't want to say a shell of himself, he has been ineffective for the Lakers. That's fair to say, right? Mm-hmm. And then they've had guys like Rondo, and, you know, it just hasn't worked. Their best option is Malik Monk, a combo guard who can shoot and is a better, he's not a great defender, but I think he's more consistent than Westbrook on that end. But they have had, and like Vogel, Frank Vogel has been criticized a lot. And if you were to take a more sympathetic view to Tibbs, you would probably apply, like, this is my view towards Vogel. And we talked with Cranges McBasketball, Tim NBA, great follow, anyone who's listening. You know, he runs B-Ball Index. And he was talking about there's really no good options, right? They can go with more offensive and spacing-oriented lineups with, like, Monk at the point, or, like, in Austin Reeves with him, and then play, like, a stretch four. Or they can play LeBron at the four, you know, or they can go with a defender at the one, but then they lose that spacing. And I think those are some similarities with the Knicks. But the biggest thing is no true point guard. The main creator is your power forward or like a big wing type. Not to say that LeBron is anywhere as near as good as Julius Randle, right? That's Julius Randle's way better. But it's that vein, right? A defense that relies heavily on rim protection, but those rim protectors haven't been up to snuff in the same way they were when the Lakers were, you know, a championship team. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis has been hurt. Dwight Howard isn't the same player. I'm not saying Dwight Howard is not the same player as he was when he was MVP candidate Dwight Howard. I'm saying he's not the same Dwight Howard he was like a year ago, mm-hmm. Which is a much bigger problem. You know, underachieving, obviously, relative to the big expectations, big market, lots of focus. An interesting group of young guards. Like Austin Reeves is a lot like Deuce, actually. He's a great defender who can shoot, but it hasn't shown out yet on an NBA level. But yeah, those are some of the similarities I see between those two teams.
Is that where DJ Augustine signed? Was it with the Lakers?
Good question. Let me look it up.
He just signed, and I know that I've seen him play.
Yeah, he plays for the Lakers. I don't think he gets much time, but yeah, he gets like 5-9. He got 20 minutes on March 11th, but okay. Mostly getting, deuce minutes, maybe.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. I was going to say he's old, but he's 2 years older than me, so.
DJ Augustine is one of those guys that, if you told me he was drafted in like 2004, I would believe you. And if you told me he was drafted in like 2012, I would believe you. I have no, there's certain guys like that where I just have no notion of their age, and he's one of them.
I think Ariza fits that a little bit too, right?
Yeah, he does. And
he also plays for the Lakers.
Lambo and Darren Collison was always that guy for me. Darren Collison could have been between 26 and like 36. His whole career, as far as I could tell.
Well, I mean, he's also a special case. It's also guys who come in playing like veterans, right? Mm-hmm. Darren Collison's also a weird case because he retired early. Like, he's still only 34, but he retired at 31 when he was like still a quality guard. He actually came back to play for the Lakers this year, and I think they cut him. But
who was this?
Darren Collison.
Yeah. Yeah, Tyreke Evans might be coming back with Golden State, which actually makes me happy.
That'd be fun. Especially if they use them at the four like Draymond, right? That would be a lot of fun. Yeah,
I would love to see this sort of thing. Anyone showing Thibodeau like that there's more that you can do with things makes me like excited and happy.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think he knows.
He does.
He's just so averse to changing.
I think he's been hurt.
But like,
he's a little weirder than people think. Like, he's a little weird, but he's not comfortable. He's been hurt, man. Like, he doesn't want to give into it, but you know it's there.
But yeah, it's not someone who's like who's blind. He's not blind.
No.
He just, you know, puts his hand out, right? Like, it's like maybe he's been hurt. Who knows, right? But that's honestly the most sad, because like I personally, like, after what happened last year, I want to see him figure it out. I want to see Randle figure it out. I want to, like, win like that and getting them the guys that can make it work. But Thibodeau has to adjust, too. That's, like, I don't think to win a championship, because he didn't have a ton of success in the playoffs in Chicago either.
Yeah. And when they used to match up with Miami, late in every game, LeBron would go to cover Derrick Rose. And Chicago had nothing. Like, they never had. Like,
and they didn't lack talent. They didn't lack talent.
But they didn't. There was no scheme after that. It was
basically,
oh, shit.
But, But part of what made him so, like, I think part, like, his profile as a coach got elevated more when Rose got hurt, and there was one year where Joakim Noah was an MVP candidate. Yep. His stats weren't that. I think he's like 12 points and like 6 or 7 assists, but yeah, he ran their offense through Joakim Noah. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the guy. Like, and he ran our offense through Julius. Like, it's not that he can't do these things. Mm-hmm. We almost have to hold a gun to his head, right, and be like, do something, and then he'll do it. But how sustainable is that? How reliable is that? And I mean, we've seen that with other coaches, right? Mike Woodson, who is,
that's what I was thinking about. His
Mike Woodson is very known for being a old school guy. He tried, like, why were we so mad that Chris Copeland? Maybe you weren't as mad. I was very mad in that series against Indiana. Well, which,
furious.
But 10 years later, I can be like, maybe we still wouldn't have beat Roy Hibbert, right? I can acknowledge that. But I was mad as hell at the time because Chris Copeland was really effective.
Was
at the three, at the five.
Yep. Just something,
and
it was something different, and what you were doing wasn't working.
And he, for a season, for like the regular season, he got that. He got that we need to play Melo at the four. He got that 2-point guards works a lot, right? A lot of guys won't play 2-point. Even that was kind of revolutionary, right? He played Kidd and Pablo together. He unlocked J.R. Smith as a really good, like, J.R. Smith wasn't a point guard that year, but he was a creator. He was a guy you could run your offense through for large stretches, which he had been a sixth man, but he had never been that. I think J.R. Smith being what he was that season is a huge testament to Woodson, and he just went away from that when the chips were down. And you know, that's, it's sad because, but that might be what it is with Tibbs.
Two more questions for you. I'm going to give you the number 2.5, over under 2.5. How many people who are starting for the Knicks this year, the regular five, do you think will be starters on opening night next year?
All right. So starters for the Knicks right now are Burks.
Burks, Fournier, Barrett,
RJ,
Mitch.
Okay. Oh, that's a tough one. Mm-hmm. Let's go. I'm going to go away from the center position because I think that's the toughest one to answer. Burks. I think there's a 25% chance Alec Burks is a starter at point guard next year.
That's so depressing.
Too high?
It's just depressing that the number exists at all, much less that it's 25%.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a scenario. Yeah, maybe it should be lower. I think there's a scenario in which Tibbs gets hired. Where Tibbs is retained. And there's a scenario where the Knicks get someone like Jalen Brunson or Colin Sexton or Malcolm Brogdon. The overlap of those scenarios is high. So, like, what I'm really talking about is the disjoint of those two scenarios, right? Where Tibbs is retained and we don't get another point guard. I will put that at 25%. Maybe that's too high. Small forward, RJ Barrett, 100%. Shooting guard, Evan Fournier, I'd put it at 65. It's not the contract they can move. And I don't think that's a contract you're desperate to move. Like, he's fine in that. I think if Evan Fournier didn't play so many minutes with Kemba Walker at the one, or with Alec Burks, who's not a bad defender, but is a bad defender at the one, like, Alec Burks shouldn't be checking Ja Morant.
Right.
Or that's a bad example because that was creativity from Tibbs. He has those games against the Grizzlies. He has put RJ on Ja Morant, and the results have been better. But you just make Evan Fournier the only bad defender in your lineup, and I think you'll be fine. And the Knicks have the personnel to do that. But I'll put it at 70% that Evan Fournier is still starting. Randall, I'd put it at 85. He's not getting traded because his value isn't great. And I think he's shown enough to say that, you can construct a winning team with him as an ancillary piece. That was my biggest concern. My concern was not, I was never in the boat that, like, Randall needs to prove he can be the guy, because he never was going to be. But this season, what worried me most is, like, Like, can you have a good offense if Randle isn't getting the ball in the post every time, drawing double teams or running DH? Like, if Randle isn't the complete focus, can he be effective? And I think he's shown that he can. He's played and part of a team concept and been better as a result of it. I'd put that at 85%, and I'd put, and then the big one is Mitch. That's really the biggest. I'll put that at 50-50 because I really have no idea.
Yeah.
I think that from looking at his production, from looking at what he's likely to get on the market, I think something like 4 for 55 or 4 for 50 or somewhere between 12 to 14 million a year should work for the Knicks and for him. But, you know, given what we've seen of late, maybe it has reached a place where they just don't want to, where it's irreconcilable differences and both sides want to move on. I have no insight into that. I think that he's not going to get too much more than, like, I don't think anyone's going to give him $20 million a year. I think the most he'll get is maybe 15 from like Detroit or someone. Mm-hmm. And I think in a vacuum, the Knicks would easily match that. So that would make me want to go high. But the fact that he hasn't developed any offensive game, and we know he's, you know, he showed up to camp out of shape. And we know that, you know, we've heard reports of his maturity being called into question or whatever. And, you know, his uncle tweeted about how he doesn't get the ball enough, which, just a side note, if you're shooting 50% from the free throw line, you've never developed a post move. You know, we've only ever like your Instagram videos aren't enough to demand that. Sorry, buddy. Right. So I wouldn't necessarily kill the Knicks over that. But all of those complications make me put that at 50-50 that he's back.
I think he's literally in his career taking one shot outside the paint. I think it's like a couple years ago he took one. I think in our last episode was the one where we talked about which teams we would most and least like to see win the lottery if the Knicks didn't. I want to just close by asking you, just looking at the top six in each conference, since we don't think the Knicks are going to make it, who are you cool with winning the East, winning the West, and who are you just, please God, not them? Like, in the top, I'd say the top six, because I don't think really 7 through 10, unless you think Brooklyn and the Lakers have something in them that I don't think they do. I would just stick to top six.
So, in terms of going to the finals, right? Not the, yes. Not winning the lottery.
Yeah.
Just going down the list by conference. I grew up in the 1990s, and that's when I became a Knicks fan, so hell fucking no, I do not want to see the Miami Heat, who are currently at the top of the East. Even though, that's the thing, it's tough because I really like Eric Spoelstra as a coach. First and foremost, he's an Asian American. I'm an Asian American. That, to me, matters a little bit. And I think I like Eric Spoelstra a lot. It's tough to not like Jimmy Butler.
This is not a hateable Miami team at all.
But it's still the Miami Heat.
It is.
And it's still the Miami Heat. Miami
still being there is the one thing that still like holds it together for me.
Yeah. So that's still a no. And I don't like Tyler Hero. So that's, I'm going to latch onto that. I don't like Tyler Hero. I don't like people saying he's better than RJ or Pelt quickly.
Thank you. So both correct answers actually by you.
Giannis is awesome. So I have no problem with the Bucks making it. The Sixers are the toughest one for me because I think I've mentioned this. I love Tyrese Maxey. Mm-hmm. I like Embiid. He flops a lot, but he's got a great story. He's a fun personality, and he's an awesome. I don't want to get into the Embiid Jokic debate. I personally am like a little bit tilted towards the Jokic side of that, but either of them winning MVP would be very much fine with me. Mm-hmm. But the Sixers are still like, they're still, you know, there's still a lot of animosity there. Right. And they have a James Harden who I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I think if James Harden won, it would make the Knicks look bad. So I don't have a problem with the Sixers getting out. I don't want the Bulls to get out. There's a team called the Bostons. What do you think? If you knew I was a Knicks fan, what do you think my feelings on the Boston Celtics would be?
Did you hate them?
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we don't need to talk. Fuck the Boston Celtics, in case that wasn't clear. No to the Boston Celtics. Cleveland would be awesome. I hate Ohio. I'm a Michigan fan. I hate the entire state of Ohio. But Evan Mobley, I think, could be a generational player. I have answered multiple polls where people are like, if you could get one player for the future of your franchise between Luka and Giannis and all these guys, I think there's a legitimate case for Evan Mobley. I think he's awesome. I like Darius Garland a lot. And I try not to be too loud about it, because anytime you mention Darius Garland, you're like, well, should the Knicks have taken him over RJ? And I'm like, I wish I could just say that I'm really happy the Knicks have RJ Barrett.
Yeah.
He's an awesome face of our franchise. And I also think Darius Garland is awesome and would have been awesome here too. But like, there's no buyer's remorse there. It's just, mm-hmm. Yeah, we can appreciate them, right? Mm-hmm. I would be curious to talk to Houston Rockets fans from like the 80s, because I would ask them, like, did you ever have buyer's remorse for Michael Jordan? They're like, before the rings, maybe before the rings would have been a better question. Mm-hmm. Like the year before they won, because it's like, yeah, you didn't get Michael Jordan. Does that mean Hakeem Olajuwon was a bad pick? No, right? It's you didn't pick Sam Bowie. And then you have the Raptors, who it's weird because they're always positioned as a counter. Like, they always have screwed the Knicks in trades. They're always positioned as like the small market, and like their fans also are like the small market. See, look how evil the Knicks are. We're the good guys. But I've never felt that animosity towards them. I've been to Toronto. I have a cousin who lives in Toronto.
Toronto's a great
city. I love that city. I like the team. I like their fan base. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Nav Bhatia, the Knicks super fan. Have you heard of Nav Bhatia, by the way? Might be a short interlude, but
so.
He's like the Toronto Raptors super fan, but anyway, he was a...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he was a Sikh Punjabi guy who immigrated to Toronto. He was actually an engineer by trade, but because of, you know, at the time, the credentials weren't accepted, he couldn't get a job as an engineer. So he started working at a car dealership, and he worked his way up to managing the car dealership, buying a bunch of his own. And then what he's dedicated his life to is essentially like being a Raptors fan, and with the money he's earned, like just bringing as many South Asian people to Raptors games as possible, nice. Which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm not against the Raptors getting there, even though on Twitter they can be a little unbearable. The 8th seed is the Nets. So this is the one team I would be like, no. Hell no. I just got into... I have friends that are Nets fans that are not on Twitter, and they have given me better perspective on... You know, we feel like the Nets are obsessed with the Knicks. But they have talked about, you know, the Nets were shortchanged at times. You know, sometimes that underdog mentality comes from that. And with them, I usually can just talk basketball. I don't have to talk all of those zero-sum things. Mm-hmm. That said, no, fuck the Nets. And fuck Kyrie Irving. If you want to play, get vaccinated. I think that the rhetoric around that is atrocious. I think the fact that he has, or people are comparing him to Muhammad Ali, makes me want to vomit profusely until I just die. So no, fuck the Nets and fuck Kyrie Irving especially. And I hope I hope they don't make the playoffs. I hope they lose in the play-in if they do. The Hawks, I lean no, but let me ask you this on the Hawks. What are your thoughts on Trae Young? Because like, his dad has been on Twitter and he engages with Knicks fans often politely. Trae Young embraced the villain role, but we gave him the villain role, and it kind of became, it's not even like, it wasn't even like a Reggie Miller thing. It was kind of like, you know, everyone is kind of, it's almost like we're two parts in a movie scene, right? And we realize we're playing our parts. I root against Trae Young a lot, but I don't hate him.
No, I don't hate him at all. I would love that guy in the Knicks.
That's a different question.
Not just that. I enjoy watching him. I've loved his game since college. I enjoy watching him play. I think he's one of the more, what's the word? You can't really look away from him. If he has the ball in his hand,
Yeah.
And he's coming up near half court. Like, you want to focus on him because you're like, I think he's wonderful. I like to watch him play. I personally did not understand or find the chance all that charming. Mostly because I just don't think it was earned. It felt to me like a simulacrum of what people who had never lived through a Knicks postseason like thought they were supposed to inherit. But like with the other people in the past who earned that kind of enmity, it was earned. Like Michael Jordan.
So like Reggie
earned it. You know, Reggie didn't have it until he earned it. Michael Jordan earned it. Miami earned it. Trae Young literally had never been in the playoffs, and neither had the Knicks. And it wasn't like he had a great game one, and then in game two, okay, the crowd comes out against him, and you're like, all right, you know, New Yorkers are a different breed. To me, the whole thing, I had no way to I don't literally believe this, but it felt like the kind of thing that like people decide before the game they're going to do, and it just kind of spreads like wildfire. But I always thought it was stupid. I enjoyed him. I enjoyed the you know, the dynamic. That just to me felt like a real desperate attempt to put a label on something that hadn't earned it yet, so you could point to it and be like, oh, I remember when we cursed out Trae Young. I mean, I love him.
Yeah.
I love watching him play.
Yeah, and it's fair to say that like not only had those guys earned it, but the Knicks had earned the right to have that frustration by being repeat players in the playoffs, not just this is our first time in 10 years. Having said that,
a franchise that there's no history with either.
Yeah.
You know.
Having said that, I thought like him, you know, he played into it. Like, how much are the theatrics worth, right? And how much are the theatrics cheapened when a player is conscious of it and he knows that Trae Young knows that if I do this, it's going to go viral and it's going to help my brand? Mm-hmm. That's to be debated, maybe. But I, you know, I thought that part of it maybe endeared him a little bit more to me. Endear is a strong word.
Yes.
But he's like the enemy you love to hate, as opposed to, you know, the enemy you just hate. I, you know, Atlanta making it would be tedious, but not disastrous. Charlotte I actually love a lot. There's no way they'd get out. And we're getting to the part of the list where, you know, the Knicks are now coming up. The Hornets are 10th seed. I love LaMelo Ball. I really, really wish we got them. That's actually how I started writing for the Strickland.
Yeah.
Because I've commented on posting and toasting for a long time.
Who were you on posting and toasting?
Tanman 5.
Oh, I liked your shit. Okay.
Well, you have to say that now. If you hated it, then you know that would just be mean if you said you didn't like it.
Compliment retracted.
No, I appreciate it, but thanks, Matt. But I remember I was commenting a lot on there. Presidente did great couple of pieces on LaMelo Ball. I mean, like, I'm not kidding. Like, whenever we fully transition to draft mode, we're still in a little bit of Schrodinger's tank right now. But I'm that would be a good Twitter handle, I think, Schrodinger's tank. Mm-hmm. But it might be a little bit too niche for widespread use. But I was arguing with this one dude a lot about, he was like, LaMelo sucks, Tyrese Halliburton is going to be an all-star. And we were just both going at each other. And it's like fun to look at it in retrospect and like, I was right about everything I said about LaMelo, I think.
Yeah.
I was wrong about some of the things I said about Halliburton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think because of the argument, I probably became more harsh on Halliburton. Anyway, I like the Hornets a lot. I like all their players, besides maybe MAGA Hayward, and even he's a fun player to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to answer your question, the teams that are at the bottom of it that I just don't want to see make it are the Heat, the Bulls, the Celtics, the Nets. And the Nets have their own category of like, at all costs, they must lose. The Heat, Bulls, and Celtics, we've seen in my lifetime, I've seen all three win. I've seen one of them win six times. I've seen another one win several times. And I've seen the Celtics win, but with their best player shitting his pants in a game. So, you know, it's like that. I've been through that. I can't handle this version of this Nets team with everything behind it and all of the people that have been on their bandwagon, especially national media writers, like, be vindicated with them winning. So it's the Nets. It's the Nets. Let's be real. Fuck the Nets. I don't want them to. I want them to lose in the play-in game or not make it at all.
That would be sweet.
What about you?
I feel the same in the East. I just, like, Brooklyn's in a different category where I like, they're that team that I need. As long as they don't win, I'm okay with however the postseason unfolds. I would say after that, I'm probably rooting most hard against Chicago because I'm bitter about all the people who correctly pointed out the Bulls had a better offseason than the Knicks did.
But do you hate the Bulls players?
No. I don't hate anyone around the league because there's no one has cost the Knicks anything. Like, I don't hate anyone. It's Brooklyn is
Kyrie?
One. Brooklyn, I don't hate Kyrie. I think he's been an idiot about certain things, but more often than not, I have defended Kyrie. I just think about the vaccine as being a jackass. But I think he's been extremely right about other things and has taken up causes that if he were LeBron and it did this.
Are you talking about more about like when he wanted, was it Ferguson, I think, where he wanted the NBA to not play? Or
there's that. I think there's some of his political activism in terms of who he's represented or endorsed and what they stand for.
I'm actually unfamiliar with that. I'm sorry. And if you have to go, that's fine. But I'm actually unfamiliar with that.
I can't remember her name. There's a woman running, I believe, in the Bronx. She's a very progressive leftist candidate. I think running for like city council. And it became a story because when Kyrie was, I think when he had initially first like couldn't come to the arena or sometimes was and sometimes wasn't, and he missed time, I think. It was a bad stretch where he ended up like at like his sister's birthday party at a club with no mask. And then when the Nets had a game, instead of being at the arena, he was on a Zoom of like all these politicians and public figures who were endorsing. I can't think of her name now. It's a New York City leftist progressive politician. And it's an exciting thing, given how few players, you know, take that kind of a stance, certainly publicly, and how many of them in particular are taking stands for, I think, those kinds of candidates. I think Kyrie's right on about a lot of things. I think he's way the fuck off about this. Like disturbingly so. But I don't hate these Celtics. Like, who would I love Marcus?
They're another team that's kind of fun, right?
Like, if they were not the Celtics, I'd probably be rooting for them because their identity, they have, you know, super talented wings. I love Marcus Smart. Robert Williams is great. Like, you know, they've turned it around with defense. There's a lot of things to like about them. And like you said, even the Heat. Like, I don't want the Heat to win, but I like Jimmy Butler a lot. I like Adebayo. I like PJ Tucker. I love Spoelstra. So in the East, if Brooklyn doesn't win, I'm happy. In the West, as long as Dallas and the Lakers don't win, I'm good. I just need
Dallas. You still have MA tours. They traded KP.
It's not so much. See, the KP thing to me, it brought a lot of that energy together. But my resentment of Dallas, which is not entirely their fault, mostly is my resentment of Mark Cuban acting and being treated constantly like he's on the cutting edge of some formula for success when his team hasn't done shit in 10 years. That was compounded by, oh, the Knicks got fleeced by Dallas. Like, that was compounded. But even tangentially with the Knicks, the whole, when the Knicks drafted Frank Ntilikina and Dennis Smith fell to the Mavericks, and, you know, I understand you put out the angles that you want, and there's public relations and that shit.
And LeBron got behind it, too.
LeBron got behind it, too. And then, so, you know, oh, they were celebrating because the guy they wanted really fell to them. And then, that doesn't work out. Nothing they do works out. They still, and he was literally on the Ringer pod, I think, had him on a couple, like last week. And the like description of the episode is like, again, talking about Mark Cuban, like he's some fucking, you know, some basketball revolutionary who, like, he really is not and has never been. He bought a team, I'm pretty sure, that had Nowitzki when he bought them. I think he was new, but I think he bought them then. You know, they made a good move for Luka. I can't stand Dallas. I hate them. I sports hate Cuban. And I think he's probably a dick in real life. And I need the Lakers to also not win, because that LeBron tweet in the preseason about, like, you know, just please, like, responding to criticism of the team's age and being like, let me just ask you one thing, like, you know, please bring this energy. You know, like, he's always setting himself up as, like, I'm going to show everybody. And you know what? This is the team that he wanted. I don't hate LeBron at all. I love LeBron. I tend to root against him because I don't think he should have to win rings to justify his place in history. I think that's a stupid, simple argument. But he has been insufferable to me since he got to the Lakers. And I would just be so unhappy if LeBron and Westbrook, like...
Did you always hate the Lakers?
The only time I have... I'm trying to think when I have ever rooted for the Lakers. The only time I have rooted for the Lakers, I think, in my life, was when they played the Nets in the finals in 0...
So you've always hated the Nets?
Yeah, well, I hated those Nets. I didn't know... I liked the Nets until Kenyon Martin and Richard Jefferson, I felt, got out of line, acting like they were the shit when Kidd would lead them to, like, destructions of the Knicks. That's when I started to dislike the Nets.
Yeah. Richard Jefferson has maintained that. Kenyon Martin came here, so now he's not a dickhead. But
Tazen Petrovic is one of my favorite players ever. I used to, anytime the Knicks weren't on in the 90s, I would watch the Nets games. I go back to, like, Tate George and Chris Morris, and when Mookie Blaylock was, like, very, very young. I really liked the Nets, but I think their fans have become insufferable, and I think the Lakers, it's mostly, I just can't stand them. Maybe it's jealousy as a Knicks fan, because they're this major city that everything seems to go the opposite of how it does for the Knicks. But yeah, I guess I've never rooted for the Lakers other than that one time.
Yeah, the Lakers for me were kind of... I remember the first time I rooted heavily against them. I really liked Allen Iverson. So when he went to the finals against them and they won game one, I was like, I want them to win.
Yeah.
And then the Kobe Shaq thing happened. And I grew up in a time period where I've always been kind of a little bit of like... not a rebel, I guess, but I try to like be a little bit of a contrarian.
Yeah.
So when I grew up, the two players that are iconic, you could add a third in Tracy McGrady, were Allen Iverson and Kobe Bryant, the early 2000s. And yeah, I was like a little bit like, everyone is just hyping up Kobe. And, you know, I used to kind of root against them a little bit. Obviously, I will admit Kobe is one of the top 10 players of all time. But I see that, and I think that with that team, when they're good, they can, you know, that can be a little insufferable. Although I will say this, I think where I've kind of bonded with the Lakers fans a little bit recently, at least, is I think they're the only other fan base, right or wrong, warranted or unwarranted, who can understand the microscope that the Knicks are put under, where every single thing you do has a 15-minute Stephen A. Smith rant attached to it. And a million tweets, and everyone is talking about it, right? The Knicks signed Evan Fournier for $18 million a year. If the Celtics did that, right, or if somebody else did, like the Celtics traded for him last year and it didn't do shit, right. They still sucked. That didn't get talked about, right?
Right?
The Celtics traded for Kemba Walker, that didn't work out, that never got talked about. But us giving Kemba Walker $8 million a year is a national story every day. I think that the Lakers are the only fan base that can relate to that. So that's why I've been, a little bit more sympathetic towards them. With the Mavs, I think my enmity is gone towards them and KP, honestly. I think we've won the KP trade. Even if Julius Randle sucks from here on out, we won the KP trade.
Yeah.
So I'm over that. I honestly hope he has a good career now going forward.
I don't hate on him.
You know, I liked him as a player. I think he probably had some maturity issues that a lot of players had at a time when the Knicks were a mess. I don't think the Knicks are a mess anymore, and so, you know, I'm kind of over that. Out of the West, man, I don't really dislike any of the teams though.
What do you like then? Like, who would you like to see out of the West as a fan?
Yeah, Golden State.
Right.
Golden State has my favorite player of all time. Andre Iguodala. No, I'm kidding. Steph, my former favorite player of all time was Steve Nash.
Me too.
Which is why because of that, I've always had kind of an affinity for the Suns.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind them seeing them get out. They kind of deserve it. They lost last year. They've been so dominant. But it would be like Steph winning it this year. And I'm a Michigan fan, and I love what Jordan Poole's doing. When he was on the team, he didn't get to show out as much because the Knicks had kind of a ball. Or sorry, the Knicks. Michigan had a ball dominant point guard who couldn't shoot, so Jordan Poole wasn't really allowed to play on ball as much. And on the Warriors, he's really been able to expand his wings and show what he's capable of. It'd probably be the Warriors for me, but I guess the Warriors, the Grizzlies fans, like it's also like a lot of these, like a lot of small market fan bases, and the smaller the market, the more this happens, hate us for no reason. Like, I feel like Grizzlies fans just hate the Knicks, even though like I like Ja Morant. I like Desmond Bain. So as a team, I like the Grizzlies, but if they're going to be insufferable, I that's not enough for me. It's not like the Nets or something. There's no team I wouldn't want to see make it out of the West, really. I guess the only two would be the Jazz and Pelicans, because both of those teams have young stars that, you know, if they were to lose, it would be to our benefit.
Yes.
So from a Machiavellian point of view, I should probably be rooting against, especially the Jazz, right? If they have a first round exit, like Donovan Mitchell isn't going to demand a trade from a team that's like on the cusp and has Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if they lose in the first round, you know, why wouldn't he come play for where he grew up?
On that beautiful note of optimism, say goodbye for episode 19. Knicks are playing tomorrow night, Wednesday night. They host Portland. And then Friday, an exciting 11 versus 12 matchup when they host the Washington Wizards. I'm sure we'll talk to you sometime around that game. They also play Utah on Sunday. So, Stacey Patton, Matthew Miranda, everybody take care, and we will talk more next soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.